Hello.
How are you?
All right.
Well, do you know what I want to say to you?
No, I don't.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Dan.
Happy New Year to you too, I guess, since this is the first time that we have spoken via voice in the new year.
Yeah, for the first time, for the last time. No, well,
Wait.
not the last, but for the first time, for the last time on the second day of this year.
Yeah, you already lost me. I just
Okay.
noticed that my audio hijack, you can name your little presets or whatever. I spelled our show wrong.
Oh.
It doesn't, I left off the D. Defocus C. I don't know, maybe it's the French spelling.
Defocusé, I think.
Defocus A. It
Yeah.
doesn't have an accent over the E. Maybe I should put an accent over the E.
Yeah, an accent au goût or accent au grave.
Isn't that when you slice the potatoes real thin and then cook it with the cheese?
No, those are the pomme de terre, apple of the ground.
Pomme de terre, that's the puffy little orange dogs that are very yippy.
Yes, they're so adorable, like Boo. I don't know how Boo the Pomeranian has turned into like an empire of teddy bear cut Pomeranian stuffed animals and books that you can buy at Urban Outfitters.
That's right. There's a dog. I thought you were talking about the Monsters, Inc. Girl.
No.
Isn't that also a Boo?
Yeah, and you can buy stuffed animals of her. I don't have either. But I have it on good authority that commercial options are available to you should you seek that out.
It's good to know.
Knowing is half the battle.
Sure.
G.I. Joe.
Yeah, how was it? How was your Christmas and New Year's festivities?
It was interesting. For Christmas, I flew to Tampa, and I was feeling fine until Christmas Day, early in the morning, late at night, Christmas Eve, however you want to phrase that, when I woke up in the middle of the night and I was coughing and sneezing and felt awful. And turned out I was ill. So I was ill all day Christmas Day. And then I started to slowly recover and venture out into the world over the following days in Tampa.
How long had you been there?
Let's see. We got in on the 23rd in the morning on a red eye, and then we were there. And so I got sick basically 2 days after I got there. And then we did some kicking around afterwards when I was starting to feel better. And then by the time we left there, I was feeling great. And then we got to New Orleans, and it was freezing cold. It was very, very, very cold. I was not really expecting that because, let's just say, New Orleans has a certain depiction in the media as being warm and humid and a swamp. But apparently, it can also be freezing cold. So that was news to me, and I had on a lot of layers. I had so many layers. I was like Steve Bannon. I had so many collars going on. But the it's not a good look. If you can avoid doing that, I would recommend it. And we ate a lot of food there, because as you do in the Big Easy, either you eat a lot of food or you go to one of the places that has like 20,000 daiquiri machines, and you just
Like Las
embarrass
Vegas?
yourself. Yeah, it's really pretty gross, to be perfectly honest. When I saw Bourbon Street, I
The
was like,
beverages or the city?
both, because they're not natural colors, the beverages. The city itself is, fine. It's just paint. But Bourbon Street was super gross. The areas around Bourbon Street in the French Quarter were better than Bourbon Street itself, but there were
Were
some
there a
moments.
lot of drunk people passed out in the gutters? That's how I imagine it.
Not passed out. They were unfortunately very mobile. We went to the New Year's Eve ball drop thing that they had. I think they like had a thing worked out with like Dick Clark Productions where they like cut to different time zones as the ball drops or whatever. And I think we were in the one that they were doing for that time
Oh,
zone.
did they have an actual ball for it?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't really tell if it was a ball shape thing. I heard. Thought I heard somebody say it was like a fleur-de-lis or something. Anyway, it's like a little thing on a stick that falls down, and it has sparkler things that shoot off of it that are like 50 times the size of the little tiny thing. I would not want to be on the rooftop that they put it on. This just seems frightening. But they had the thing.
I'm sure all of that stuff is very very fire retardant and very recently brought up to code, so it is not at all at risk of catching on fire.
Yes, if there's one thing I think of when I think of New Orleans, it's things that are up to code. No, the thing was just on fire, just spraying sparkler stuff everywhere, but it was okay. And then the fireworks went off, and I was worried about getting tinnitus from that because it was very close, but it was okay. The other thing I was worried about getting tinnitus from was Imagine Dragons. They were there, you know, they were doing the thing with the
playing stuff. some radio rock music, huh?
Yeah. So that was something I didn't know about until we were walking over there, and our friend told us.
A little extra treat for you, isn't it?
Sure, I guess. That was the moment when we got there, near-ish to the stage. I had an Instagram story of me just standing there, just pointing my camera around, because that's what you do.
You're kind of pointing at nothing in particular, too. There was like the side of a building, and then a little bit of a crowd, and then you hear some echoey Imagine Dragons in the background.
Yeah, that side of the building is where the little thingy was on top of, but you can't tell you can't tell from the video because that's how tiny the thing was. And then I panned over to where we could, what we could see of Imagine Dragons stage performance behind and through the trailers that were in front of us. I did not record the drunk stumbling idiots who were pressed up against us, basically grinding on one another and into me. It's not my bag, really.
I mean, that just sort of comes standard with doing any sort of New Year's thing out in public.
Which is why I typically don't do that, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, that Instagram story, it kind of just looked like you accidentally hit the record button, sort of pointed like three quarters up in the air, and then like stopped.
That was basically it, because I was just like, okay, so I guess I should record this so people will believe I was here. Check.
Know, the dozens of portrait mode photos of you and Jason eating food weren't enough.
Jason is very fond of the portrait mode. I am less so.
Is he the one who is insistent that your photos are taken in portrait mode as well?
Well, he was taking them of me, so yes. He took one of me where it like obliterated the top of my head. I did not care for that, so I actually opened up Pixelmator and I painted in from the unportrait moded version.
God, you repaired your broken portrait mode photo?
I did. Yeah. It's the kind of broken man that I am.
That's very you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was going to say, they looked pretty good in terms of the edges. I mean, they were sharp and a little unnatural, but they looked pretty good.
Well, they're totally busted. Also, if you look at the noise, Apple still has not figured out that you should match grain, basically, which is dumb. Let me explain that for the audience. If you zoom way in on a portrait mode photo, the part that is not being blurred out will be sharp and will have camera sensor noise, especially if you're in low light conditions. And that is something that you notice, and most people would call like film grain, but it's not grain. That's not the same thing. But for our purposes, sometimes the terms are interchangeable. And the other thing when you're doing that is that when you blur something that has grain or camera noise on it, you should apply that grain or camera noise to the thing you have blurred, because otherwise you have something that is very smooth and has no grain next to something that has a lot of grain, and then it just doesn't match. So I actually use the noise function inside of Pixelmator to try to approximate the grain.
So not only did you comp back in your broken hair, you added grain to it. You matched it to the original.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would be able to tell any of these things.
Were you really
just looks
bored?
Like a portrait
mode
photo.
Were you doing this like while walking around the streets of New Orleans?
No, I was sitting there in the hotel room when we were resting between lunch and dinner. But
you mean between dinner and later dinner?
Well, no, that was a different day. On New Year's Eve, we actually had a very late dinner at 9:45. So we had a sort of snack of sorts, where I went and got us Zapp's potato chips from the Walgreens. And then I got back to the hotel room, and keep in mind, the temperature was 34 degrees. So I walked from our hotel room on Rampart and whatever, Rampart and Dauphine or whatever, I don't know, over to Canal Street, where the Walgreens are. And there's so many Walgreens in New Orleans. I don't know what the deal is, but there's like 50,000 Walgreens to every CVS. But I went there and got the Zaps, came back. And Jason's like, oh, where's the Prosecco? Where's the Cava? And I'm like, what do you mean? He said, that was the plan. We were going to have that, and this is the potato chips and some bubbly. And I was like, oh, I didn't hear you say to do that, so you just have potato chips. And he's like, oh, well, that's depressing. We're just going to have potato chips. And so we went down to the Homewood Suites thing in the lobby and looked at what they had there, and they had, like, an Abita lager thing, and then they had a bunch of Heineken, which is, I don't know, undrinkable, and then they had
standard hotel beer,
yeah, and then they had a bunch of vodka and bourbon and whiskey and things, which I did not really feel like consuming straight. I don't know why they have that, because they don't really sell a lot of mixers. They just have a lot of booze for whatever reason at Homewood Suites. I get the impression that business travelers are not particularly well adjusted, but we it was
so
determined.
It's what you got to do to reset yourself when you're on a different time zone. Just need to knock yourself out.
Just drink yourself to sleep, I suppose. But I did not do that. I instead went back to the Walgreens. Only now it was a 30-person deep line inside that Walgreens. So I looked across the street, and there's this place called Magnolia Wines, and I stopped in there, and there was a guy picking out beads. Like, you know, the kind that you get thrown at a parade, something like a Mardi Gras parade, only this is the kind that you buy, because you don't have time for that, apparently, and you pick out whatever sports teams matter to you as a person, and pay $9 for each of them. I could not believe it. I was waiting behind this guy, and he was taking forever, and he bought, like, I think he spent 80 something dollars on the beads and like one beverage thing that he got. And I was like, okay, that's pretty sad. And the guy is like, oh, I should have asked you how much it was before I asked you to take all those down. He was like too embarrassed to not buy them at that point, I guess.
Are these like the big, like, puka shell kind of bead things, or just like the little clear plastic ones they used to get at like the arcade?
Oh, no. Mardi Gras beads.
Yeah, but like, Mardi Gras beads traditionally are still pretty like garbage plastic things.
Yeah, the little, basically round plastic balls that have that sort of chromy, thick paint, plasticky stuff over the tops, you know?
So, but the balls or beads or whatever, they're mm-hmm. like a quarter inch in diameter, maybe?
Oh, tiny. No, these are teeny tiny.
Yeah. $9 for that, huh?
Yeah, and it had like a little sports logo thing, emblem, whatever, on the bottom, which is also interesting because while I was there, I learned that there's a team called Clemson, and I learned that there's a team that Alabama has, but I don't know what the name. Oh, Crimson Tide, that's what it was, because everybody's saying Roll Tide, and I was like, what the F? What are you guys talking about? Mm-hmm. But
that's their motto.
Yeah, apparently. And also they were everywhere, all of these people, because it turns out there's this thing called the Sugar Bowl. Anyway, so timing. New Orleans for New Year's Eve, maybe not so great, but I got some cava. So
you got some cava as a beverage?
Yeah, cava to go with the Zaps. We got the Crawtater Zaps, the Cajun Crawtater Zaps, and the Cajun Gator Dill or Dill Gator. I can't remember.
I saw these. Are these just humorous names, or was it actually supposed to taste like crawfish and alligator?
The flavor of the Crawtater one is supposed to be evocative of a crawfish boil, or if you're
Crawtater is crawfish potato, not crawfish alligator,
right? And but it doesn't have crawfish seasoning in it. It has the seasoning that you would put in a crawfish boil,
which is kind of like a little bit of a cayenne kind of thing.
Yeah, like cayenne Old Bay, I would describe it as. Sort of like spicy Old Bay. If you're in the South, I suppose you'd say a crawfish bowl, because you're not like pronouncing eyes for whatever reason. But that's supposed to be the flavor of the Crawtator one. And then the Dill Gator Potato, whatever that, I don't remember the name of that one. The Dill one was the better one. It was basically like a dill pickle brine potato chip, kind of like a salt and vinegar kind of thing, but with kind of that dill pickle flavor in there.
I've had a dill flavored potato chip. I enjoy a dill potato chip. It's kind of chill, but it's good.
Yeah, I really like that one. Jason and I decided that was the best one, and I did a Twitter poll, and then it didn't win.
I think most people were confused by the names of these things.
Yeah, because they didn't think they were real. Somebody asked me to prove it, and I posted a photo of the bags, and they're like, oh, I can't believe that exists.
I know there are a lot of unusual regional single-serving bags of potato chips in different parts of the United States, but that one in particular, I don't think I've seen before. I could use my imagination about what they tasted like, but I was unfamiliar as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't particularly have them very often as I am not in the area, but there are some places in Los Angeles where you can get some Zaps, I think. I just haven't ever. They also make a brand, one of the flavors is called Voodoo Heat, which is supposed to be very piquant. I had no particular desire to test
you
out.
You didn't want
to
try the spicy ones?
No, considering we were going to go to a 9:45 dinner, I didn't want to cram myself full of super spicy potato chips.
Are they really that spicy? It's the South, though. Like, everyone down there is bread on mayonnaise.
I would say that there were lots of things that I had in New Orleans that had a potent kick to them. A good amount of heat. Not necessarily spicy, but just, like, heat.
Well, because cayenne is—it's got some heat, but it's not like a habanero heat,
right? Exactly. But there were a lot of places where they also had hot sauces of various varieties. There is, of course, the stuff that you more associate with the kind of white people hot sauces, where it's kind of like that vinegary stuff, you know?
Oh, sure. I enjoy a vinegary hot sauce if you're talking about like a pulled pork sandwich or something. But...
Yeah, which we had on our Willie's Chicken Shack. Chicken tenders when we went there.
Is that a well-known institution?
It is apparently a local institution. We passed several branches of this fine establishment, I suppose. I was trepidatious about going in there because I was like, let's go to another one of these, you know, fancy schmuckety schmuck places that have the things and we'll get some more gumbo or whatever. But Jason's like, yeah, no, I want to have fried chicken in the South. And I was like, okay. And he's like, we can't, but the kind of fried chicken he wanted, like a chicken and biscuit kind of a thing, like is not the thing that you would get in the French Quarter. But
No, that's not particularly that part of the South. Right?
No, he was not very good at that, determining that. But he settled on Willie's Chicken Shack, and we walked to the Willie's Chicken Shack, and inside. Oh, and by the way, it was 29 degrees that morning. It was New Year's Day, and there was no one in there except for one lady in her, you know, mid to late 50s, I think, in front of us in line. And she had her order to go, and we waited behind her, placed our order for the place. And that was it. We were the only people in there. The doors were open to the cold. I was freezing in there. And we sat and
guess
we ate.
The no wait is pretty good, right? Is that because, were you guys there for like a breakfast type hour?
I think it was 12 o'clock when we went. Yeah, it was very strange that it was empty. But it was a place that we had seen packed when we had walked by in previous days. So I didn't feel like it was like a health scare issue.
Did they have a rating stapled up by the door?
No, New Orleans apparently does not have the rating system that California has. And I'm not sure I want to know.
We have it here with the big letter.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, I just mean that in terms of my frame of reference being Los Angeles. Not that other people can't have big letters too, but
in Los Angeles, isn't it the case that if it has anything better than a C rating, it's not authentic?
Oh, I think that's baloney. I'm not gonna, No, I don't do that.
That's the local wisdom I've heard from people who moved there.
Oh well, yeah, doctor cousin friend.
Yeah, fake doctor cousin. Yeah. That's his rule for San Gabriel Chinese food.
He's incorrect.
the place he took me was upgraded from a C to a B from the last time he had been there, and he was upset. that it now had a B rating.
He needs to get over that one. That's not a thing.
There were still like buckets of dirty mop water and stuff like in the corner or whatever. It was fine. It was gross still.
Good.
I still had something with way too much Szechuan pepper that made my tongue go numb. But anyway.
Oh,
back to your Chicken Shack.
Willie's Chicken Shack. The only thing that threw me really was the number of daiquiri machines that were in operation that hour of the day. They had, I think it was probably 10 daiquiri machines going along the wall behind the register.
So this is the thing
that
everybody has daiquiri machines.
At least every establishment on Bourbon Street, they were daiquiri. Frozen daiquiri places everywhere.
Doesn't matter if you're a bar or a fried chicken place or a pastry place or whatever. You got daiquiris, huh?
Yeah, because there's also no open container laws, so everybody's just wandering around the streets with those like novelty grenade cups that have the really long stems, so you can grip them as you sway back and forth. I suppose, but yeah.
Anybody who had a promotion about if you drank your height in beer or daiquiris, you get like a free shirt or something?
I didn't, but again, I basically
that's the gamification that Las Vegas brings to the party that other people really aren't competing on.
There might have been that on Bourbon Street, but I'm going to be perfectly honest and say that I did not look for that.
I mean, because as you are aware, they have like mechanical bulls and junk down there too, which is, you know, a very Las Vegas thing to do.
Yeah, well, if Las Vegas is your thing, I think you would greatly enjoy Bourbon Street. I that's just gross. I can't deal with it. I didn't get a drink on Bourbon Street. I didn't do anything on Bourbon Street. We basically crossed it.
You didn't even get like some bourbon and stand there and be like, look, Bourbon Street.
No.
Seems like that would be a thing to do.
That is precisely why I did not do that, Dad. If it's like the easiest thought that comes to your mind, there are probably 50,000 people on Instagram who already did that.
Well, okay, first of all, the easiest thing that comes to mind is Café du Monde, and then like,
well, I did that.
All of the other, yeah, exactly, literally all of the other food of the area that you go do and you eat and the things.
The powdered sugar that they use seems so wasteful. The amount it's
part of the tradition, right? It's from a bygone era where powdered sugar was more bountiful and grew on trees.
Well, I mean, it's a grass, I think. Yes, it was just too much. Like, you basically like excavated your beignet from a mountain of like Scarface cocaine, and then you ate that. They were delicious, by the way, and very unlike a donut in texture. You know, if anybody brushes it off and says, oh, a beignet is just a donut, I would say that there is a difference. And I would say that the ones that I had at Café du Monde were worth going to have. So go for it. But other than that, the powdered sugar thing, I just don't understand.
Did you, when you were in line, did you like elbow Jason or anybody else and go like, hey, this is that place that Jon Favreau took his kid to get beignets in that movie?
No, I didn't feel like that observation would be appreciated.
It's good though, but that's from the movie. Didn't they also buy bread for their sandwiches around there somewhere too?
I think so, but although it wasn't exactly like a location, I think that they highlighted for the bread.
Nondescript farmers market in the French Quarter.
Well, there's like a French market thing. It's kind of like when you go to the farmers market in you know, next to the Grove in Los Angeles in Mid City, that LA farmers market. Where there's just sort of like stalls of people selling all kinds of stuff like hot sauces and hats and things. So
at the same stall or the separate stalls?
Separate stalls, but just all next to each other. Just kind
Does
of like
anybody
how it
sell
is.
Like one of those hard hats or sombreros where you put the beer cans in and then drink out of, but like retrofitted for hot sauce?
I did not see that, no. Although there were a lot of stands that were selling Gator. So if you want to have some fried Gator, I know the place that you can go.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Do they have any Gator substitute? Because I feel like that's not very sustainable. Do they have any like Tofader or whatever?
No, I don't think they have Tofader. That could be something you could pitch them on. Because that is something about the New Orleans diet doesn't seem particularly healthy with the amount of saturated fat and butter.
Well, I feel like
and everything.
That particular area is not representative of the overall New Orleans diet, but I don't know. Maybe it is. I have never actually been.
I don't know. But I got to say, the best meal I had when I was there was at Compère Le Pain, which is a sort of Caribbean. They pitch themselves as a Caribbean style restaurant, but it's on the higher end of things. So they kind of do like some fancy fusion-y stuff.
Does that mean they just put a bunch of like golden raisins in their rice?
No, but it meant we had sweet potato gnocchi in our goat curry. The goat curry was fine. It wasn't my favorite.
Is the place where you guys had like 40 courses of like two bites.
No, it wasn't 40. We just had like a 12. Couple starters that we split. Cause we had like these little duck arancini where there was like dirty rice, with like duck sausage and, duck liver pate inside the center of the dirty rice, and then that was breaded and fried, so like a little croquette. And then there were also these other croquettes that were conch fritters, basically, where it was conch on the inside. You ever had conch before?
I would struggle to say when, but I feel like I have.
Yeah, it's sweet tasting. It's not like briny or anything, We had those there too, and that was good. And the blackened fish that they served, the black drum, was very good.
They blacken a lot of things down there too, don't they? Chickens and fishes and other things.
There's probably more blackened fish you'll see on the menu in Florida, but the blackened fish you see there is more for color than for heat. I don't know, maybe because they know everybody's a wimp, so it's not spicy at all if you get a blackened fish inside of the Florida region.
I don't think of a blackened fish as being particularly spicy. I think maybe like some jerk type spices, but I don't consider that spicy per se.
Well, it should have theoretically some kick to it, but most of the time, I find when I go to a place and I get blackened fish, it's like no heat at all.
Yeah, you got some burnt spices, and it's a little crispy.
Yeah, that's basically it. But Compère Le Pain was very good, and the owner person came over and was like, oh, hey. And we're like, we recognize you from the magazine we saw you in, but we didn't say that.
Did you fanboy all over the owner of whatever this French restaurant is?
No, we like to recognize people and not talk to them.
Sure.
Yeah, like I saw Brian Batt, who played Sal on Mad Men when we were at the French 75 bar. That was interesting because I was like, oh, I know that's Sal, and I'm telling this to Jason, who has not watched any Mad Men, and so he doesn't care. And he looks at a photo that I pull up on Google image search, and then he looks back at the guy and he goes, I don't know, he looks kind of bloated. And I'm like, this is horribly rude. Like, he's just
was he
he's
not
just
wearing
a real
his
person.
Smart, his smart three-piece brown suit?
He was in a three-piece suit, I think, but it was navy. It was hard to tell. It may have just been an outerwear thing. He was sitting at two tables behind us, basically. That was interesting to see him. We did the other thing. We went to the Roosevelt Bar and we had a Sazerac, like a real Sazerac, where the Sazerac place. So we had a French 75 at the French 75 place, and we had a Sazerac at the Sazerac place.
I enjoy a good French 75. What kind of Sazerac do they make at the Sazerac place?
A Sazerac?
Right, I know, but I feel like the Sazerac name has like kind of been adopted as like a brand by Buffalo Trace now too. So like, but like, who? What are they using?
Sazerac rye whiskey, there's an Herb Saint spritz or rinse that goes on the inside of the glass, and then I forget the other things that go in there.
I thought traditionally the rinse was either absinthe or what's the one with the P?
I don't know. Everybody seemed to be using Herb Saint everywhere we went. Yeah. But the friend we were with also had said they thought it was absinthe. And I was like, I don't know if anybody uses absinthe for that anymore. But
it's either,
maybe.
It's supposed to be absinthe or some form of Pernod. I don't know how you pronounce that properly.
Yeah, Pernod's how you say that.
Yeah.
Was it
good?
Do you know what I found out about Herb Saint?
No, what?
Herb Saint is a brand name of an anise-flavored liqueur originally created as an absinthe substitute in New Orleans, Louisiana in 1934, currently produced by the Sazerac Company.
So this is a difficulty with the Sazerac because it's a type of drink. It is a brand of liqueur. It's also a type of liquor, and then it's the finished beverage as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I wouldn't.
It's a good drink if it's made well. The first time I didn't have one until I don't know, like 2-3 years ago at some restaurant. I'd never heard of it, and then I very much enjoyed it. But it's too much of a pain to make. I have the stuff here to make, but I don't.
Cognac is the thing that I was missing.
There's cognac in it?
Yeah.
There's no cognac in a traditional Sazerac.
IBA specified ingredients: 5 centiliters of cognac, 1 centiliter of absinthe, 1 sugar cube, 2 dashes Peychaud's bitters. But I could have sworn that the Sazerac that we had Sazerac rye whiskey in it. Anyway, I don't care.
I tried to type Sazerac into my Safari right here, and it recommended Sazerac.com as a suggested page, and then it loaded with a missing plugin right in the middle.
Oh, good.
It's a Flash website, apparently.
Yeah. No, it's I don't know. It's fine. Like, I'm not going to order more Sazeracs. I had one. It was good.
You're still more of a Manhattan person, huh?
I think so. There's an herbal, I don't know, floral vegetaliness, I assume because of the herb scent that's used in it, that I just don't care for as much. It's fine, but it's not my thing. It's kind of like an herby old-fashioned, whereas, you know, a Manhattan has a certain sweet kick to it.
It's more of a vermouthy thing instead of the herb thing, but
mm-hmm. And it makes I find a smoother cocktail. But
it really depends. Like the problem I have with the Manhattan, I made a pretty good Manhattan the other day here.
All the proper ingredients now.
I did. In fact, the reason it was good is because I pulled a Joe Steele and I put 3 Luxardo cherries in my Manhattan, which made it quite good. But the problem, the downfall, is always the vermouth, because. I don't know, is there such a thing as like good vermouth? And then, I don't know, getting the ratio exactly right is always a difficulty.
Yeah, you want to avoid the Martini Rossi sweet vermouth one that you usually see at most places.
I don't know what it is. It's a green bottle with one of those stupid labels that has too many decorative flowers drawn on it or something.
Okay. It's not helping.
I don't know. It was like $7 or whatever, maybe.
Okay. Well, the one that I would probably steer most people towards is the one that I'm trying to remember the name of. Carpano Antica Sweet Vermouth. That has a red top and a somewhat antique paper-looking thing on the front of it. That one is decent. I would avoid all of the others. I have not successfully come across any of those that I enjoy drinking at all.
I think this is the one I got. I think I have this Rivada or whatever this is.
The Antica one?
I think the brand is Rivata. Yeah.
No, that's something else.
No, this is... Oh, great. Thank you, Total Wine, for trying to verify my age. Yeah, that's the brand.
You sure about that?
You're sending me. No, that's not the picture you sent me. That's not it.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. Antica is the one that I sent you the picture of. That's the good one.
Yeah, sure. I'm just telling you the one that I do have.
Oh, I thought you were arguing with me that you said that
that. No. That's not. I have bad stuff.
God, this even looks hideous. It looks very Central European.
Or this one. Yeah, this, like, these are the two bottles that I see a lot. They're all very decorative. I don't know what the deal is.
No, I would avoid those. The one that Jason had for a long time that is not really dead yet, but I'm pretending it's dead, is the Martini Rossi one. I don't enjoy that at all.
Well, this is the thing too, like, you don't use a lot of it and you're supposed to keep it refrigerated, so I imagine it's supposed to go bad at some point, but like, when does it go bad?
I don't know, actually, to be perfectly honest. And I don't think you have to refrigerate sweet vermouth, but I could be wrong, because it tastes like awfulness. But how was your Manhattan that you made yourself?
It was good. It was quite strong. It tasted good. I drank it very quickly. And I was thinking about going back for another one, but I didn't, because probably would have been bad, because it was a very strong drink.
Yeah, it is a very strong drink. Surprisingly strong. You have the second one, and you're like, oh, should have had 1.5. The other thing about the Manhattan is sometimes I switch it up and have a Godfather, where you're using some amaretto in there. And that has
in addition or in place of something.
I believe it is in place. I use it in place, although I don't think it is actually technically in place. But what I do sometimes is I substitute all of the sweet vermouth for amaretto, and just do it that way. I also like the taste of amaretto, and a lot of people don't. So, you know, whatever.
There was a time and place where I did enjoy that flavor. It has been a very long time since I've had any, so I couldn't tell you now.
Yeah, it's kind of like that cherry-ish flavor, although it's technically not made of cherries.
It's a little bit thicker than you would imagine.
Yeah. But it's flavorful. It also makes for a good whipped cream. If you're making whipped cream from scratch, which is insane, and don't do it, but if you do, use amaretto or Grand Marnier, and they make a good flavoring for your whipped cream.
I feel like we've discussed this, but I don't make whipped cream. That's insane.
It is really insane. I've done it by hand, with a little tiny whisk and a little tiny bowl, and then you just sit there beating that thing for 15 minutes, and you're just like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, I think if you ask anybody who cooks on a regular basis whether or not you should do that by hand, they're going to say no.
Yeah, no. I just
Was the hand mixer broken?
Jason doesn't have a hand mixer. I have a hand mixer at my apartment, but I don't ever want to make whipped cream from scratch. Only he does. So we're at his place and using his whisk to make it. And then he gets tired, and then I have to take over, and then we just...
You know, good birthday gift or Christmas gift?
I already got him his Christmas gift. It was a 5.5-quart Dutch oven from Staub.
I feel like maybe you should have gone hand mixer.
Maybe next year. But
or just gift him yours.
No, but that's mine.
you can get a new one. I'm sure there'll be a Prime sale or something coming up soon.
No, it's my stuff. It's the principle of the thing. But I have. Yeah, it's the principle of the thing. Yeah, I got him a nice Christmas present. He can buy his own hand mixer if he wants. It's like $30 if you go to Target. He hasn't done it.
I imagine you reminding him of this the entire time you're taking over for it and making your arm hurt.
You're right. I should just use that as my defense for not helping next time. I should be like, well, you should have spent $30.
Did you get a hand mixer on Prime now?
Yeah, probably. I'm going to assume there's so many strange things that you can buy on Prime now. You know, whatever. But your staycation holiday thing that you had going on, how did all that go?
It was fine. It was very mellow, very low key. Most of the family was out of town. Really basic Christmas, and then New Year's we stayed in, watched a movie. And then a bunch of jackass kids in our neighborhood around midnight started firing off, I mean, basically like mortars. It was so loud. It was like on the verge of like breaking plates in our cabinets. And it scared the bejesus out of our dog, who hid under the bed for like 3 hours.
Oh, I saw that sweater you made for Petey.
Yeah, thank you. It was a nice sweater. Thank you for bringing that up.
Do you want to explain?
He's a very odd-shaped dog. So we've tried to get him because, I mean, it doesn't matter now because it's 76 degrees outside in Phoenix for some reason. A week or two ago, it was, you know, we were going for our after-dinner walks with the dog. It was like 45 degrees, so I felt bad for him because he doesn't know that he's cold. He's just very excited to go run around and pee on stuff. We tried to get him like a little sweater. It didn't fit him right. The leg holes didn't work. And then we tried to get him like this little like puffy jacket thing, which kind of works, but kind of irritates him too because he's like a pug chihuahua / beagle thing, and he's very oddly shaped, and he's very long and kind of low to the ground, like a corgi thing. We tried unsuccessfully 2 or 3 times to find something for him. We just had to return it, and I realized that I had a very old, very large pair of sweatpants. I'm not sure if this was a style of the time or whatever, but the pant legs, they're like hammer pants. They're huge. So I figured they're probably going to work. So I measured his chest area, and, you know, he's like 24 inches around or something. And that happened to be basically the same size as one of these pant legs. So I snipped a pant leg off these felt blue sweatpants. And then I measured his leg hole area, and then I cut some leg holes in it, and I made him a nice little kind of turtleneck type sweater thing out of a pair of sweatpants. And it fits him nicely and keeps him a little extra warm on his walks.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Yeah, it is covered in dog hair because it's felt and it's not built to resist dog hair. And he sheds like crazy, which isn't irritating as all hell. But anyway, I think he's warm. He seems to enjoy his walks. Although, if it stays like this weather, we're not going to need to use it ever again. We used it twice, and I cut the leg off my pants for no reason, even though I don't wear those pants. So it was fine to donate them to the dog.
Yes. Well, you should be wearing hammer pants, sweatpants.
They're very large sweatpants. I mean, they're like, I don't know, they're just like regular large sweatpants, but they're like a good foot too long, and they would fit an elephant. They're built for people with elephant legs.
Well, other than adventures in dog clothing,
yeah.
Did you have like a tree that you've had to take down, or did you?
No, all of our Christmas lights are still up. We'll probably take them down this weekend. We got one of those fun little laser blasting star shower things. Are you familiar with it? Is this a trend where you live? It's very big in the suburbs because it is like the pinnacle of laziness.
I'm gonna need you to explain everything about that.
So there's like this little dingus. It's like $30 that has a stand that you can either just like plop it on the stand, or you get a little stick that you can hammer into the ground. And it looks like, I don't know, like a radar gun that a cop would have. But it shoots red and green laser pointer type things out of it.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it sort of like moves around in varying patterns, or you can have it sit still or something. It can even project like laser patterns of like Santa Claus's face or something. So we got one of those to sort of like spray red and green lights all over the house, in addition to our normal boring lights. But this is the thing. Like, they sell them at Walgreens now, like cheap versions of them. I got this one on Amazon. It's all the rage for people who are too lazy to put up way too many Christmas lights. You want to add a little extra color and flourish to your house without going to Target and spending another, you know, $300 on strands. So we did that. We got that up, and we got our normal jewel colored lights across the peak of the house.
Well, that sounds very festive.
Yeah, it's nice. And then, of course, we got the tree. We got a fake tree. Makes me sad because it doesn't smell like a real tree, but it's much, much less maintenance.
Yeah. But we've been over that. That's why you got to burn the Times Fraser fir candle.
Yeah. We've had a couple other Christmas scented candles. I have not fired up the Fraser fir this Christmas, partly because, like, you know, Christmas flew by and it was like not cold at all, so it wasn't particularly Christmassy feeling. But I don't know. I feel like I need to fire it up just in my office for the next couple of days. Just get that last little bit of Christmas on there.
Just get that last Christmas high. Mm-hmm. We as a matter of fact, before we went into record, we were lighting up a candle to get rid of the frozen Trader Joe's sog paneer and cauliflower rice smell in the kitchen area, and we lit the Nest holiday candle, which was recommended by listener Rye, and I like it a lot. I think it's a good overall holiday scent, but I think that the Fraser fir for me is more evocative specifically of tree smell, so I prefer that one.
tree smell.
Yeah,
it's a good candle. It's it's still sitting right behind me. I should light that thing up.
Mm-hmm.
The other peculiar highlight for the holiday season, which I haven't yet had the chance to test, is for Christmas, my fake doctor cousin that you've met gifted me with one of them. What do you call it? The subscription movie people thing with the weird app card thing.
Movie pass.
Movie pass. I got a movie pass thing.
Isn't that like blacked out a lot of days, and like you can only use it like a certain percentage of the time, etc.?
I have no idea. The app is the app is very janky. It's very like, I don't know, cobbled together like WebView nonsense. It doesn't quite fit the iPhone X. But it appears to work. It has our local movie theater on there. It doesn't appear to be blacked out for anything other than 3D movies, which is their thing. You can't do 3D movies. But I haven't yet tested.
Oh, them. Shucks.
I'm gonna test. Yeah, right. I'm gonna test it out here one of these days, I'm sure. But it's very odd. It looks very hacky and very sort of like 4chan or something. But like, yeah, I got theoretically, I can go see one free movie a day every month.
That's nice.
Yeah, I got 6 months of it or something. Like, apparently, that was their holiday thing.
You can expand your repertoire, and now that it's Oscar season, all the stuff that came out at the end of December that's limping through January, February, mm-hmm. and March, you can go check those out.
Go check out that that dope new Christopher Plummer vehicle.
Yeah. Remember that Ridley Scott interview that I sent you where it just seems like he's on a mountain of cocaine.
He seems legitimately insane, doesn't he?
He seems very energetic
He usually seems pretty measured in his interviews, don't you think? I mean, especially for like an elder statesman who has been around the block a number of times. And made some good movies and some less good movies. But in that interview, he seemed very full of himself, very full of beans, and just kind of like an egomaniac who's had a lot of sugar.
Yeah, a lot of beignets. No, he definitely...
He likes his beignet plate clean.
He definitely seemed like he was having a time. And he also seemed like he, you know, DGAF about like a lot of things that, you know, you might be concerned with if you're concerned about like propriety or like, just manners, I guess. But,
I would love to know if there's an audio version of that interview available to listen to, because the way he's talking about like things, like when he was describing Blade Runner, you know, how it was way too long and it was embarrassing because most of the script was his, even though he didn't get credit for it or something. He spent a lot of time sitting with the writers working
apparently
on it.
Apparently he sat with the writer working on it, but if you don't like record with a tape recorder what you're saying to prove that you contributed, then you can't get a writing credit or something.
Mm. Yeah.
And he can't be bothered apparently to actually do the writing part.
Most of that script is his, was the words he said in that interview.
Yeah, and so he kind of seems to be taking, I guess, blame for the length of the film in some regard, I suppose, is his way of doing that. But it's
a good movie. Yeah. We talked about this. Like, it's one of the few movies that actually, like, earns the length. don't go.
I didn't go anywhere. I just... Yeah. You said something funny.
I heard the way you clear your throat there.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I'm getting over a cold. But,
you get some beignet sugar in the back of your throat there for a minute?
Yes. Yeah. Just getting over a little post-beignet drip. The thing with that interview was just that he seemed a little bit more frank than I would have expected. Also, very full of... Not giving an F about all kinds of things, including storyboarding and how he's able to shoot things faster than anybody, even at the age of 80, because he plans things well in advance. And he then compared himself to Fincher for some reason. David Fincher.
The interviewer brought that up or something in comparison to sort of the types of things that they're making. But yeah, he said Fincher goes overboard. And he was sort of, you could like hear him rolling his eyes when he said he wants to shoot until they're exhausted so it's real. And it's just this implied eye roll after. And it's like, all right, buddy. I mean, all you filmmakers are weirdos with your own processes, but like, I don't, you know, glass houses or whatever. But, you know, I'm a person who's very much like on that side of like plan it out. Don't shoot stuff you know you don't need. Like,
oh yes, don't shoot anything.
At the same time, you don't need. Shoot it till you get it right. Like it doesn't matter if you do like one take or 20 takes. Like you shoot it till you get the thing that you're looking for. Yeah. Like this, like pride in the fact that you don't do more than 3 takes is nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, a butcher should point is all I'm going to say as a retort to that.
That butcher didn't point until like take 14. I would like to say.
Oh man!
It might even have been later than it might have been like 17 or 18. I have to go back and look.
It's okay, as long as you had enough tacos for all the takes, then it's fine. But the
it only takes important... it only takes 5 minutes to make a new taco, so
it does. About that.
God, I need to do something larger or dumber or whatever just to like wipe that off of my reputation.
Well, apparently you can do Alien Covenant and then brag about how fast you did it. Some kind of proof that you're a good director.
Right, exactly. You know, it's going to be, you know, on time and under budget because I'm a pro and I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, he deserves, I suppose, some degree of bragging after, you know, the amount of work that he's capable of doing. I just think that maybe he might be someone who's tightly wound.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't want to, like, talk too much crap about Ridley Scott because he's done a lot of great things, but like, I don't know, when was the last time he really like hit something out of the park? Like the Martian, I guess, sort of.
That was his last critically acclaimed thing. I didn't really particularly care for that.
And if you recall, like, mm-hmm. I liked it even less than you did.
Yeah, I should say
I didn't like it less than you did. You seemed to think that I was entirely missing the point of the genre.
Oh, the movie. Well, it's because I had knowledge from reading the book about how things were supposed to be going, and then Ridley Scott apparently just decided to make the movie in a different way. But it is what it is. God bless him and his Golden Globe comedy winning movie. I thought that was an interesting interview. And worthy of a read for sure.
Apparently have to find that link again for everybody.
Yeah, he's been apparently doing a bit of a press tour. So he was also on the KCRW show that Kim Masters, the Hollywood Reporter, does. Although I haven't listened to that episode yet. I meant to get to it on the airplane, but I didn't. So I'm going to give that a listen as well. But I don't know if he is as full of beans as you said in that. But we'll see.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know what's good?
Yeah.
Red beans and rice.
Oh, red beans and rice is so good. Don't even get me started on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the worst part is it's so good, and the best example I can find of it around here is Popeyes.
Yeah, we had it at Willie's Chicken Shack.
So what did you get at Willie's Chicken Shack?
We had, we each ordered a 3-piece tender meal, which came with fries and a roll, they called it, although it was kind of like a weird cross between a traditional buttermilk biscuit and like a corn muffin. It was sort of corn muffin shaped, and it was crispy on the outside, like it had been baked in a little tin, but it definitely had sort of a biscuity kind of interior to it. It was very strange, and not flaky, but like the cakier kind, like a drop biscuit.
Did they make a face at you for ordering the tenders? Because I feel like chicken, like fried chicken tenders, kind of, that's kind of like the fried chicken for people who really don't want fried chicken kind of thing.
I think boneless chicken wings are the fried chicken for people who don't really want chicken, but
slash children or whatever, but like, yeah, I feel like the traditional fried chicken, you gotta get like a drum or like a breast or something there.
Right. They had all those things there.
But you didn't order that. So then they didn't make any faces at you when you ordered tenders.
Nobody made a face. I think they were just happy we ordered the same thing, so they only had to fry those, the same batch. But we had that, and they had the hot sauces for us to use, so those were there. The French fries were, I would say, similar to Popeyes, where they have that sort of like crispy exterior coating to it.
They're kind of like a double fry thing, but probably cold.
Yeah. These weren't cold, but overall, I would say it was similar to Popeyes would be. But slightly better than. It was still definitely fast food. It was not gourmet, as evidenced by the daiquiri machines. But Popeyes does not have daiquiri machines, so I suppose if you wanted to get wasted on different colors of the rainbow, you can't really do that at a Popeyes.
On the contrary, my friend, because Popeyes has one of those stupid touchscreen soda machines where you can make any sort of color combination of beverage you choose. You just have to bring your own alcohol to put in it.
Yes, like any classy Popeyes customer does.
Yeah, I think the problem with Popeyes from time to time is if you catch them on like an off day, there's always the issue of potentially questionable chicken, but sometimes the breading will be so thick and sharp that it will just cut your mouth up before you even really get around to enjoying the chicken.
Well, also, there is I'm not sure if they clean the fry oil as frequently as I would like, because there is like an aftertaste if you eat, because everything there is fried.
So I don't know that anyone has ever cleaned the fry oil as frequently as you would like.
Probably. I just want them to take better care of that stuff, because if you use very used oil, it does have a taste that it imparts to things. And with Popeyes, I generally find that leaves an aftertaste, because you're having the spicy sauce when you're eating the thing, so you don't really notice it then. But then you're like, what is that thing coating everything in my mouth? And it's just like, oh, it's dirty oil. That's great.
You should come try our Popeyes, see how it compares.
Yes. Just start my campaign to check all the Popeyes. No, there were, when we had our offices over in Burbank, there was a Popeyes that was not far away at all. So I ventured over to the establishment on more than one occasion. And sometimes I didn't feel very well for the rest of the day. So you'd think I'd learned my lesson, and I didn't. Mm. Yeah.
Fast food fried chicken can do that too, I suppose.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. But, you know, spicy fried chicken, it's good. Not that their chicken is spicy, just that you dunk it in the spicy sauce.
Yeah, their little packets of buffalo sauce. It's that incredibly deep nuclear red color. It kind of looks like iodine or something.
Yeah, it's not a good color, really, when you think about it. But, yeah, just get yourself some spicy Red 40, and then you're all set.
It's pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Any other noteworthy holiday meals that you had on your staycation?
No.
Is that a good thing? I can't tell if you're relieved or disappointed.
it's fine. The high points of the holiday are mostly the alcohol.
Oh, that's what most people say.
Mm-hmm. I got some more scotch. I got some more bourbon. I got all kinds of things.
That's good. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have not received anything. We went to my dad's on Christmas Eve morning, and we had we were offered mimosas. I did not realize until I started drinking the mimosa that it was made with Martini Rossi Asti sparkling wine. You know that one?
I've seen it. I don't think I've tried it, but I am familiar with the fact that you are opposed to this beverage.
It is bad. And the orange juice was particularly acidic, too. So it just really left an unsettling...
Was it like Minute Maid or something?
It was... I didn't see what it was. When I ordered my mimosa on the Southwest flight, that was regrettable because it was Minute Maid. They give you a can of Minute Maid and then a tiny little thing of Prosecco. It's like, this is absurd. And I felt bad because I was like, I'm just not going to drink this. So when the flight attendant's coming by to like click trash, and I'm just like, this is full of liquid. I'm very sorry. And they're like, it's okay. And they just dump it in the trash bag she's carrying. And it's like, I hope that doesn't explode and get Minute Maid everywhere.
Did your ruffled collar explode with indignity when they handed you Minute Maid?
No, but it was not worth it. I should have just had a beer. Jason had a drink ticket coupons, so he was very excited to use them.
Is there anything? I don't know. I feel like all airport or airplane alcoholic beverages are disappointing. So you might as well just go for like a vodka ginger ale or like a Jack and ginger ale or something, you know, something that you know is going to be terrible and sugary, but just not like the acidity of a Minute Maid that you have to drink with a fizzy wine beverage.
Well, it was also technically the morning, hence the mimosa.
You know, ginger ale could be a morning beverage,
I suppose. Jason got Bailey's and coffee, but I don't really love Bailey's and hot coffee together.
I feel you shouldn't drink anything on an airplane that has water in it that didn't come out of a bottle.
Yeah, I've heard all this stuff, the tanks, etc.
Don't do that.
Yeah, well, he did it. He's fine. He's alive.
Are you sure?
He's replaced with a pod person.
Yeah, there's a worm controlling his brain now.
Yeah, he had some more fancy coffees when we got to New Orleans because it was so cold. He kept trying to order stuff at every place we went to. So we went to the French 75 bar. It's like, what do you have that's hot? And they're like, nothing. And it's like, well, what could you make that's hot? And they're like, well, we could make an Irish coffee, I guess. But, you know, it would be we'll just have to whip it up in the back. Is that all right with you? And he's like, yes, that's fine. And so they give him that. And they had like whipped cream that they had in one of those like professional restaurant canisters, like not the little ready whip thing. But then we went to the Ritz-Carlton. They were doing the same thing over there, except they had the ready whip canister. So it was less exciting when you had the Ritz-Carlton one, I suppose. But I had neither, because I can't do that. But when we were on first class, when we got upgraded to first class on our flight back, we had some nice bevs for that. So that was enjoyable.
What kind of bevs in the first class?
Well, just better wine than they have in the coach area.
Better airplane wine?
Yeah, well, it doesn't come from the tiny bottles. They poured it from, like, a real bottle, which is exciting. Yeah. And when you say you would like a glass of, you know, the Sauvignon Blanc or the Chardonnay or whatever, they just like, they fill that thing. I don't know why.
Sure, they don't care.
Yeah, no, they don't care. Anything to keep us like placid, I suppose, is the way to go. Docile. But that was a very enjoyable flight, all things considered. And I had a meal.
Oh, what kind of meal?
It was cheese ravioli. The choices were cheese ravioli. It was pretty decent, surprisingly.
Was it Chef Boyardee?
No, it wasn't the tiny little gross things. It was there were like larger ravioli filled with cheese, and there was a fresh tomato sauce that was with it, with little cherry tomatoes still crushed up in it, and basil leaves, and a like pesto puree stirred in with some of that chunkier cherry tomato sauce.
Mm.
It was decent. I wouldn't. You know, if I was like on the ground on Earth, that would not be impressive to me. But
particularly because it's probably served in a little plastic tray thing too.
No, it was all served on real dinnerware.
Oh,
with silverware to eat with, and a cloth napkin underneath. And there was a little thing of like a smoked fish spread, which is the smoked salmon all diced up with dill and stuff. That they were like little pita rounds that you would spread that on. And then there was a little side salad with a balsamic dressing you could put on top of that, and a slice of New York style cheesecake with a raspberry coulis on top.
It sounds incredibly dignified.
It was very dignified. I was surprised. It was not as good as the food that we've had on international business class flights, but this is my first time eating anything on a domestic first flight. Usually the couple of times that I've had a first class ticket, like two times, it's been a red eye and there's no food served. You have a nicer seat to try to fall asleep in until somebody has a medical emergency, and they're very insistent that they're not diabetic, but the stewardess thinks that they might be, and then they get that under control, but it takes a while, and then the baby starts screaming because the lights were turned on in the middle of the night. Anyway, it can be less nice, and I suppose under certain circumstances, but it was very nice that evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you're back in LA, ready to start the year off strong, get back to work, and make some good visual effects.
Sure. are you ready for the start of your year?
Oh, sure. No. No.
I'm excited to have more movie topics in the future, though. So,
yeah, we should talk about movies. These episodes are it's good to chat, but these are probably very horrible things for people to listen to.
I think this is really for like a certain very specific kind of fan who's very interested in all of the minutiae in our lives. But we'll get back to you picking really bad movies for me to watch in the future.
Not all me.
Oh man, that was so funny!
I love the way that was framed.
Oh.
Dan makes Joe watch these horrible movies.
Yeah. for the record, that was specifically about Trading Places, which is something that you recommended we watch, based off of a list of available Christmas titles that I had
you
pulled
gave
together.
Me a list, and I basically the way I chose from that list is I didn't want to watch Christmas Vacation because I don't like that movie. And then the other one was Jingle All the Way, and I don't have any particularly strong feelings about that, and I was left with, a few other options. And, you know, we were doing our hipster Christmas, so Trading Places, hipster Christmas. Not like I was emphatic about it or anything.
No, but you said you'd seen it before and you'd liked it, and then you're rewatching it, and to your credit, like, you were just like, oh, maybe there were some things in here.
I liked it in a very John Landis way, where I was analyzing it much less 15 years ago when I was a child.
And of course, you know, I didn't get any slack. I didn't get any flack at all for picking Bad Santa or Gremlins or anything. It was no. Dan makes Joe watch all these bad movies.
For reference, people who don't know and don't listen to Reconcilable Differences, it came up very briefly on the most recent episode. Well, second most recent episode by the time this comes out, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was interesting. This is a brief aside about that. But
movies from the 80s are problematic.
Who knew?
Times change. John Landis. What have you done to us, John Landis?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like there's something about people with the last name Landis who happen to be working in the film industry.
Let's try to wrap this episode up without driving completely off a cliff like Helmut Louis style.
Yes. Well, we should watch that sometime. Right. So, Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year, Dan.
Yeah.